Hey, Carlson Casters, thanks for listening to today's episode. We apologize, it's almost a week late, but it's our fault. Our board died in the middle of the episode last week, and it's taken us this long to be able to put together an episode that sounds good enough for you to listen to. So, we hope that you enjoy it, we apologize for the delay, and we'll see you next week for episode 100. Enjoy today's Carlson Cast.
Welcome back, comedy fans, to an all-new comedy at the Carlson Cast. Get more information and subscribe at carlsoncast.com. Today's episode is a very special episode. We're on episode number 99 with Sashir Zameda, everybody. Very excited. Of course, today's episode is brought to you by Sapori Cafe and Catering, Rochester's favorite spot for lunch and any of your catering needs. Find them on Facebook and Instagram at Sapori Rochester. Also, of course, Three Heads Brewing, the makers of Rochester's favorite beer. Remember, do good things and always be kind. And now here's your host, Mr. Louis Anderson. Oh, it's actually Vinnie Paulino, everybody. I got them mixed up. Sorry.
Everybody mixes us up. It's okay.
Don't do that.
Chip.
Stop it.
I do that in my house all the time. It's a bit of a problem.
Can I see you in a dress just to make the comparison?
I'll text you some pictures.
Thank you.
Yeah. Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Comedy at the Carlson Cast. Number 99. Episode 90 freaking 9.
It is.
That sure is a number.
It's one more than 98.
Yep.
Not quite a hundy. But here we are. Sashir Zameda is going to be our guest, SNL alum. She has her own special on Netflix, Pizza Time or Pizza Mind. And she also had a show called Party Time.
You said Pizza Time because it's always Pizza Time for Vinnie Paulino.
Accurate. Very accurate. Excited about this week at Comedy the Carlson. I want to thank everybody who came out last week for New Comic Night. We had such a good time. It was awesome. Brian wasn't there. Woo! Best time ever.
Yeah.
Welcome back. You were not with us last week. Where were you again?
I was in Nashville. It was a lot of fun.
Usually I really like
that town. Nashville's one of my favorite places.
Excellent.
Just don't drive there.
Well, just fly there and stay, if you don't mind me saying so. Brian, that's my advice for you. So, Sashir Zameda, we're excited to have her in today. If you have questions for her, text us right now. The text line is open, 585. I always got to look, 484-0265. We will do our best to sneak your questions in for her. If you are enjoying the show, we appreciate you very much. You mean the world to us. For all of you who are listening around the world and downloading it, thank you. Please do us a favor. All we ask you to do is just leave us a review. Just say something nice.
Yep.
Or say something, you know, slightly above mediocre.
Right.
We're you can say something mean, just still click 5 stars.
Correct.
Yeah.
That's the WATP model. Yeah. That's my friend Carl's podcast model. People just say terrible, terrible things, but still give them 5 stars.
Yeah, that's all we care about is the stars.
Yeah,
that's all we care about.
We're not reading the...
We don't read those. We don't read those.
Not true. I read them and take them to heart.
Yeah.
I get very sensitive.
He cries every day. That's why he cries.
Oh, every day. So, very cool. Text line's open. Send in your questions for Sashir. We'll be back in just a few minutes with her, so stay tuned. Big shows coming up this fall at Comedy at the Carlson. Get your tickets now. Brian, tell the people who's coming.
I will do that. We have this very weekend Sashir Zameda and Dan Viola on October 18th. On One Night Only on October 26th, Michelle Wolf. Rocky LaPorte, November 1st and 2nd. She took everything that I had. And November 7th through 9th, Bobby Slayton. November 8th, Mike Racine in the Rickles Room. And November 14th through 16th, Gary Goleman. Get your tickets for that one. That's probably going to sell out. Vicky Barbalak, November 21st to 23rd. Thanksgiving Eve, Dr. Dirty, November 27th. Chris Allen, November 29th and 30th. And December 5th through 7th, Chris Frangiola.
So many Chris's.
Yep, and December 12th through 14th, Pete Corelli, not a Chris. And one of our favorites, April Macy, December 19th through 21st. And Rich Voss, My Mortal Enemy, December 26th through 28th. Tim Meadows, January 2nd through the 4th. And, if you need tickets, check out carlsoncomedy.com or call 585-4-COMEDY, and we will see you all at the show.
All right, folks, this is one of those spots where the episode got a little dicey. Our board, like I said, died in the middle of the show, so we are going to join our interview that is already in progress.
So one thing I saw about you that I found very interesting, that I think you're the first actual, can we call, is it diplomat? Like, what can we call you?
your
ACLU role.
Yeah, I'm an ambassador.
Ambassador, yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're the first genuine ambassador we've ever had on the show. Yeah, so,
you.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, is that technically royalty, or how does that work?
Yeah, is
that basically a princess.
Is there a scepter involved?
I'm the celebrity ambassador for the Women's Rights Project for the ACLU. Mm-hmm. And basically, I just, like, am a mouthpiece to whatever issues need to be talked about at the time being, which, like, right now is, like, reproductive rights and healthcare for all. And, it's really an honor to work with them, because they asked me, and I think they just saw my material and what I was working on, and they were like, oh, it seems like what you're talking about aligns with what we do in our work.
Yeah.
I think that's cool that they saw that.
Oh, great. So they came to you.
Yeah.
That's a cool call to get.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And we've been working together since, I guess, 2015, so a few years now.
Yeah, wow. Yeah. I didn't realize you'd been doing it that long. I thought that was a recent thing.
No.
Oh, wow.
Like, a few years now.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
So, like, when they first asked you to do that, like, you're like, ambassador? Like, that's kind of a weird thing, but, I mean, it's very interesting and a lot of work, but how often do, like, they have you going out speaking and stuff? Because that's a big responsibility, I would imagine.
Yeah, it's not, like, all the time, but sometimes they'll be like, here's an event we want you to, you know, speak at or, like, do comedy at or be the face of. I've written essays for them. I've written sketches for them. But I'm just trying to find ways to bring my audience to what they're talking about or people who know what ACLU is about, like, bridge them to my comedy. You know, we try to, like, cross-promote, I guess, and get each other, like, people to just not just see the issues and be like, oh, that's an issue, but, like, here's a way we can look at it.
And you can sell some tickets later.
Yeah, yeah.
That's pretty cool, though. I mean, if you're going to get a rub off of something, might as well be something that you really believe in, and, you know, yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah.
And do you make people call you ambassador?
I do not.
I would.
Yeah, you kneel in front of me.
Well, it's like they always call you by your highest title. Like, you know, like Hillary Clinton, they still call Secretary Clinton.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I would make people call me Ambassador Brian all the time.
Ambassador Sashir. I mean, it's a nice ring, yeah.
Yeah. That would just be a really cool role. I also saw I'm totally lost it. I'm on some of the ambassador thing. But when did you get started?
I started doing improv in college. So, like, 2007, I guess. And then I moved to New York in 2009, and I was doing improv, stand-up, sketch all at the same time. So I guess I would say that's my...
You just did them all at the same time?
Yeah, yeah. I was very ambitious and doing way too much. But I was just hungry and excited to do this.
Wanted to see which way... Which way things were going to go.
Yeah, because I liked improv and I was doing it and it felt fun to me. And then people I knew in the improv scene were doing stand-up. And I was like, well, that seems like a fun thing to do. And I started doing it and fell in love real hard and have been doing it since.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And when did you start doing, like, stand-up?
I guess I started in fall of 2009 and then... I think within the year, I was, like, going to mics regularly and doing shows, booking my own shows, and, yeah, hitting it real hard.
Yeah, and that was all, like, all New York.
All in New York, yeah.
Yeah.
And I think I started going on the road in, like, I don't know, 2013, 14, like, a couple years later. But, yeah, now I do it all over.
And where are you from?
I'm from Indianapolis, Indiana. There is a comedy scene there, too, but I didn't... know about it when I was there. I
love Please forgive me for this. Oh, sure. I'm so sorry. Try that.
Oh, was the mic being crazy?
The mic was being crazy. I'm sorry about the technical issues, folks.
That's okay.
And I apologize. Didn't mean to jump in your face. So, Indianapolis.
Indianapolis, Yeah, there's a comedy scene there. That's where I first saw improv, but I didn't do it until college. And started my own group at UVA and is still going, which is really cool.
That's got to be cool to look back and see something you started that people are still picking up the banner for.
It is really cool, yeah. It's there was like one group when I started there, and then I started another one because I was like, why not? We need more.
So improv was the key to comedy to you. It's what kind of started the car.
Yeah, definitely, because I watched it, and I watched Whose Line Is It Anyway all the time, and I just remember being like, this is magic. This is, like, so cool. You're creating this thing with people that have different brains and experiences, but you're, like, making a story together. And then, you know, I also saw stand-up and was like, I mean, this is also great where you don't need a team of people. You don't need props. You don't need anything. You just, it's just you. You're writing it.
Yeah, that's why I do stand-up. I don't like other people. I just can't imagine, all like, relying on other people. People like even it's like scary. A even like a band,
yeah,
you know, when you watch a band you're like, no, I want it to all be my
all be my
responsibility, and if I screwed it up, I screwed it up.
Yeah, I do like both though. I like the collaboration aspect of it, and stand-up also, there's collaboration in that too. You know, I have best friends, pretty much all people in my life are also comics, so
right.
You know, we bounce ideas off of each other, or like run, you know, give each other punch up lines or whatever. And I appreciate that because it can feel very solitary, but then you remember, oh, it's a community. You know, we're all helping each other out.
Yeah, and we've said multiple times in this show, like, it's more common that a person who starts with improv can become a good stand-up than a stand-up can become good at improv.
I do think that's true.
Yeah.
Improv definitely helps everything because you can be more off the cuff and you know how to respond to things. You're better at listening to things, so you can read the audience and read the vibe. And with stand-up, I do think it's hard because you're just so used to writing jokes.
Yeah.
And you can't do that in improv. If you come in with a joke already ready, you might derail a whole scene or, like, mess somebody up because you guys are not working together.
And I think it's also, as a stand-up, you're trying to develop your own persona, and you've developed that persona, and that's your persona, and you don't want to...
You don't have to change it for every other
scene. Yeah, you don't want to be something different, you know, every scene, you know.
And in improv, you're doing different characters, so it's like...
Yeah.
It's a new muscle.
When you were young, you wanted to be a journalist?
I did, yeah. I thought I did. I wanted to be a broadcast journalist. I think I knew I wanted to be on TV.
Okay.
And I was like, well, they're on TV.
Yeah.
The news people. Yeah. And also something about, like, giving what I glean from society back to an audience was something I liked. But I didn't... I did shadow a broadcast journalist and was like... Oh, they're just waiting for the news. Like, truly, we just had to wait for stuff to happen.
Yeah.
She'd, like, get the story and report on it. But I was like, I think I like creating more than, like, you know, being reactionary, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I went more into, like, writing and creating my own stuff versus waiting for a news story to respond to.
Right. Who wants to sit around and wait for tragedy, you know?
Yeah.
Well, you don't have to wait very long.
Right.
Yeah.
So when you started doing improv, how far along were you on that path before you decided to, like, give stand-up a try? Like,
I did it for a year in college, and then when I moved to New York, I think I did it for a few months before I started doing stand-up, because people in my classes were starting to do it, and the way they would describe it was like, oh, it's scary. Like, they were scared to try it, because it's like a whole new thing with a whole other group of people that you have to, like, get to know and learn about, and I like doing scary things, so I was like, well, I'll try. just do it.
Let me ask you this question. When you got on stage for the first time for stand-up, obviously you've had your, you know, your turns on stage doing improv, so you're used to talking to the audience.
Yeah.
Used to go, but now you're the single lone voice.
Yeah.
How did you approach it? Like, I mean, did you write differently? Did you try to do something kind of, like, with the audience off the cuff? How did you approach it? Did you go pure stand-up, or was it, like, kind of a...
It was, I guess, pure stand-up. It was very... is more observational. I would just talk about other people or other things I saw as opposed to talking about myself. Because I just didn't know how to do that yet. I was like, here's a thing I heard on the train. Isn't that funny? And I was like, I guess. And it wasn't until I started talking about my dating life or my family or people, you know, people in my life, people were like, oh, now that's when the belly laugh started coming. And they're like, I can relate to this. I know who this person is, as opposed to here's someone just trying jokes, you know.
That's an interesting observation about it. I've never really necessarily thought of it that way, but you're absolutely right. When you're going on stage and you're just doing jokes about everything around you, you kind of come off as like a little bit of an asshole because you're just being judgy about everything.
Yeah.
No matter, even if you're trying to be funny, it still comes off as judgy. But then when you have that personal touch on it, you're a real person, and that person is reacting to the things, and it creates a better picture for the audience.
I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's the stuff that I like watching. I want to feel like I know who this person is and how can I relate to what they're saying. Because even if someone hasn't been in the exact same situation as I have, the feeling's the same. They might be able to translate that to something else they've been through in their life, and I like that stuff. I like when people come up to me after a show and they're like, oh my God, I so got that because that happened to me, or I went through this thing, or I'm so glad you said it because I never heard of that before and now I understand it better. And I just feel like it's a really great way to connect people.
And I feel that's, I think in modern society, like people say that, you know, social media draws people apart or whatever. I think it's the opposite. I really feel like everyone now expects to know you.
They
don't expect you to just present your product, your material.
They want to know you,
you know, and like it was like in the 50s when you knew your grocer and all that stuff, you know. I think it's back to that again now where people want to know everything about you.
Yeah.
And if you're closed off, then they're closed off to you.
Very much so.
Yeah.
Yeah. You want to feel like familiar.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, you're obviously someone who feels the need to be you on stage at all times. I listened to Pizza Mind.
Oh, yeah.
I loved it.
Thank
I thought
you
it
much.
Was really great. I listened to it for a second time last night driving back from a gig. And one of the things that I thought was really, really interesting, and not that I want to talk about your material or anything like that, but I thought you had a really interesting point about the melting pot of America and that special. If you haven't had a chance to listen to it, it's available on Amazon. You get it on Stars, and it's also for download on Apple, iTunes, and Spotify. Check it out. But you talked about America not being so much a melting pot, more of like a pizza.
Yeah.
And I thought that was a really, really interesting thing. And you also had some interesting thoughts on cancel culture, which I thought was really refreshing.
Yeah.
Do people give you grief for trying to talk about that stuff? Or do people generally react positively? Because I thought you came from such like a good, positive, like different perspective in ways I haven't thought about it, that I was like, oh, this is really refreshing.
Yeah.
But then I also thought, wow, people probably get really mad at her.
I'm wondering. It's definitely a mix. Because I remember, in that joke I was talking about Hulk Hogan at the time.
Oh, yeah.
It came out a couple years ago. When he got in trouble for saying the N-word.
Yes, he did.
A bunch.
And lots of times.
About his daughter's boyfriend, I believe, was the situation.
And I mean, I guess it's interesting because I talked about that joke and now we talk about cancel culture a lot.
Yeah, you were a little ahead of the times.
Yeah, I was a little ahead of the times. But yeah, I just thought it was wild that he got so... not that he got so much backlash, not like he didn't do anything bad, but I do believe in redemption, and I would like to see people try to do something. So, you know, the WWE, they, like, removed him from the Hall of Fame, they, like, scrubbed him from the website, and I was like, that's so wild, like, he built that, you know, he helped make this whole thing happen. And also, I'm not even, like, a WWE fan, I don't know much,
but sure.
Like, this is stuff I saw online. But, you know, I was like, you know, a better lesson would be to have him, like, learn about different cultures on air. And then everyone's learning about it and be like, he's like, you know, I realize maybe the N-word is not so great. And everyone's at home's like, oh, I'm also learning a lesson, as opposed to, like, the lesson's like, oh, if you say one bad thing, your whole life is
erased
destroyed.
From history. Yeah.
But also that is kind of what is happening to a lot of people.
That's the only reason I'm not in Congress.
The only
Yeah.
Not like we won't let you.
No, yeah,
we put drunks in before, bro.
Yeah, that's true. That's fair.
I think that really is interesting.
But some people have heard that joke and been like, oh, so you want Hulk Hogan to say the N-word? And I was like, you must have not listened to the joke. You clearly didn't get it.
Mm-hmm.
I just want people, you know, if you make a mistake, that sucks. And maybe you should be admonished for that. But if you are willing to learn and grow as a person, I want to see that. I want to see you try.
And now all of our mistakes are in front of millions of people. The entire world, you know, can find it, you know, 10 years later. And because you said one stupid thing on Twitter.
On record
yeah.
For so long.
Yeah.
I've been on Twitter for like 10 years. It's crazy.
Yeah.
So
that's like a chronicle. You could write, like, people could write books of their lives of just their tweets.
Yeah.
Well, the Library of Congress keeps all your tweets.
Oh. Too.
Yeah, they're all in the library. They're all on some hard drive in the Library of Congress. Nice. Yeah, I couldn't believe that when I saw that. I kind of got a little tingle in the back of my head going, oh no, what did I say? The government has it. I don't know.
So the lesson really should be, hey, let's learn and grow.
I think so.
As opposed to let's not be terrified to step on each other's toes at all times.
Yeah, because that's not fun either.
It's not fun.
You want people to be human and talk and communicate with each other. And sometimes you're going to say something wrong. And that makes sense. You do that in real life too. But I've also had conversations where someone says something off color or offensive, and I, in the moment I'll be like, hey, that rubbed me the wrong way, or that sucked. And then they're like, whoa. I didn't, now we're talking about it, as opposed to them saying it, I call them out online, they get fired from their job, and then it's like a whole thing, and the only thing they're learning is I guess I can't say anything.
Yeah.
I guess I just can't talk.
And that is a big root of a problem, because when you can't talk about it, it just makes a bigger divide. It doesn't bring people together in any way.
When you can't talk about it, you just mutter about it in your car and get more and more and more angry. Yeah. About whatever it is that you're angry about.
And your
about.
iPhone records it and it goes to the Library of Congress. It's really goddamn technology.
There's no way around it.
But I think that's a beautiful message.
Yeah.
I really do. And it's one that I feel gets mixed. It gets, missed.
And I think that's why comedians get in trouble for it more than anybody else, because we want to talk about things. That's our freaking job.
Yeah.
And we're trying to put things out there for people to talk about. And yeah, we're going to say the wrong thing sometimes, and it's going to happen.
Well, I think also people don't understand that sometimes when you're watching comedy, it's not a finished product.
So yeah.
It's like someone might be working through an idea and they don't have it fully done. And so if someone's like, whoa, that was a crazy statement that person said, and then runs with it, they might not, that person, that comic might not even stand by what they said.
Because we lie.
Yeah, all the time.
It's not all true, people.
Isn't the biggest fear someone having a camera and an open mic?
People have gotten in trouble for it.
They have. Yeah. They certainly have. I just feel like it's important to remember. I mean, there's the whole punching down thing, but there's also, a line where even if anything, a taboo topic, gets brought up, immediately people just shut down. Audience members just shut down, and they don't let you get your idea out there. They've already closed their mind to what you had to say.
Yeah, I don't even think my stuff is risky or racy, but sometimes I'll just say, I don't know, the word black, and people are like, and I'm like, guys, I'm black. I can't talk about this stuff. I did a show.
Are you sure? Are you positive?
I did a show in Austin, and which I think, in my mind is progressive.
Right.
And it is.
For Texas.
Yes.
Let's put a disclaimer on the end.
Yeah. But I remember doing this joke that was so innocuous. I was like, I was ending the joke, ending the set. And I was like, I want to leave you guys with this. So white people do this. Black people do this. Lesbians do this. And poor people do this. See what I'm saying?
Right.
We all may have our differences, but we all look equally ridiculous when we do the dance that Charlie Brown and the rest of the gang does from the Peanuts.
Yeah.
Right. So it's like a Peanuts joke. Very silly. But as soon as I go, black people do this, people are like, oh no. And then I kept going, and it was like the reverse of noise. Like it was like, sucked out of the room. Like, where is she going with this? And then I get to the end, and they're like, oh, I guess that's fine, but I was so stressed out.
You created
Charlie
a singularity
Brown was a
of
racist?
Sound.
I don't know what's going on.
It's like those are all the demographics that were on that show. There was a poor kid who had dirt around him all the time. There was a black kid. There was Peppermint Patty was a lesbian. We had all these tropes.
Wait, Peppermint Patty was a lesbian?
That's what we don't know. She was a kid.
You've destroyed my childhood now.
Did you have a crush on Peppermint Patty?
No.
Why would that destroy your childhood?
Yeah.
Please explain. Have another drink. What are you talking about? So, that's interesting to me.
how do we fix this? How does it, I mean, do you got any ideas on how we fix it? Because it's a problem.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think the pendulum will swing in the other direction. I don't adjust my stuff. I don't want to be, like, arrested by what other people think in the crowd. Like, I'll just, I feel like you kind of, you have to teach the crowd what's going on.
Right.
And also do it in a way it's like, you can just trust me. Just trust me. I'm leading the train.
Yeah.
We're going on this journey. Okay, you feel uncomfortable. I can call it out. We can talk about it. I'll ask questions too and be like, why do you feel uncomfortable? I've had full conversations with people where they've like shouted or been like upset by something I said and been like, all right, why are you upset? What is this making you feel?
Anybody ever give you a good answer?
No one's ever given me a good answer. No. They don't really know.
Right.
They got all this repressed energy that they're not even aware of. But it just like comes out in a negative way. And I'm like, well, where is this coming from?
They're just like, words.
Bad, uncomfortable. why?
The only good answer I've ever gotten from that is somebody was heckling me really bad. And I two or three times I tried to nicely engage him and it was just getting worse and worse. And I just said, dude, what is your problem? And he goes, I'm really drunk. And I was like, I was like, okay.
All right. Know that.
Embrace it. Mm-hmm. Shut the fuck up and let me finish what I'm doing.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was. Yeah, you just admitted I'm really drunk.
Yeah. Oh, man. It usually never does.
Yeah. No, it's they've had their argument with their wife or their husband or whatever.
They came in with a bad attitude.
You know,
they got other things going on.
It's yeah.
You.
Yeah.
It's not thinky time for them.
No.
It's just drinky time.
Yeah.
Yep.
Which is so strange that people get so drunk and it's like, you have to sit and listen now. Like,
it's the best point.
We're not partying. You just have to sit here and like listen to somebody talk.
Yeah.
If you're not into that, you should go.
Yeah.
Well, I know that you have to go because you have to go to the beat this morning.
I do.
But I just want to thank you for coming in. I want to apologize to everybody listening that we had some audio problems at the front of this episode. We're just people. We screw up.
It was gold. Just believe it. It was all gold.
It was the best episode we've ever done.
Yep.
And for those of you...
Why me?
Yeah, well, Cam did it all. It's his fault. It's not. So, Shira, I can't wait to watch your show this weekend. I'm really excited. And if you can't make it this weekend, you really should check out her album. Check out her podcast with Nicole Byer.
Yeah, best friend.
I love Nicole. She's really great. She was a great guest.
Yeah.
Can you tell her hello for us?
I will.
Please do.
And... be here this weekend. I think you're really going to enjoy it. We're going to be back with the news with Ross Johnson in just a few minutes, so stick around.
Muted.
Thank you so much. I'm sorry for getting up. Thank you for being awesome and watching another episode of the Carlson Cast. Don't forget we're streaming live on Facebook and YouTube every Friday morning. You could also follow us on social media on Twitter and Instagram at CarlsonCast. You can listen anytime on iTunes, Google Play, and we're now available on Spotify. You should also check out an amazing app called Laughable. And on the Laughable app, you can connect to your favorite comedians in a way you never thought you could before. Download it in the App Store and visit CarlsonCast.com for information on more shows. And don't be a jerk. Rate and review. Hello, everybody. It is time for us to talk about what's going on in the world of stand-up comedy. And when we want to know what's going on in the world of stand-up comedy, Google. Number one, that was funny. Number two, I said Google, whatever the hell I just said. You caught me off guard with something funny. You don't do that often. Forgive me, folks. Either way,
the kids are using the Google.
It's probably best to use Google rather than listen to this idiot. It's Ross Johnson.
It's the Instabooks. Hi, everybody. Welcome. So, hi. Good morning. Or whatever time it is.
Good start.
All right. Thank you. That's the news.
He was right. He only had three of those.
I don't feel so bad after what he just did.
Yeah,
I
know. Yeah.
Okay. Easy peasy this week. Nothing too dramatic, although there are going to be some ominous rumblings in the comedy world before we get to the end. But
ominous?
No great tragedies this week. So
everybody is alive and well?
Well, okay.
Define well.
Rudy Ray Moore is still dead. That's the news. We've talked about Rudy Ray Moore. He's going to be the subject of Eddie Murphy's docu-comedy drama coming out on Netflix.
Dolomite.
Dolomite is My Name is the name of the movie. He's the famous for Dolomite guy. He's also known as the godfather of rap for his comedy albums, and then also doing some sort of early, you know, what's seen as sort of early rap. So the rumor is, according to Comedy Hype, with the movie coming out, also a lot of his stuff is getting sampled all the time. So his back catalog, which is like 30 plus rap and mostly comedy albums, is for sale.
Vanilla Ice will buy it.
Vanilla Ice will buy it. albums including titles Eat Out More Often, This Ain't No White Christmas, apparently is up for sale for millions of dollars. So I guess he's having a little bit of a moment. Nothing too earth-shattering there, but his name, I think, is going to be in the news over the next couple months, and I think people are starting to pay attention to this comedy and rap legend once again, so I think that's a cool thing.
I'm going
to
tell you, good story.
You got it, man.
Good stuff.
Yeah.
Don't blow it. What do you got? What else you got?
Actually, it was a pretty quiet week, so, you know, this is good. So Sarah Silverman's got a couple things coming up where, you know, she's had a couple setbacks lately. Her previous show had gotten canceled. She had sort of the blackface thing where she didn't get the movie, but she's landing on her feet. She's got a new comedy. HBO announced she's got a new stand-up comedy special coming and a late-night series pilot that she's done, which I guess is looking pretty promising. So she's going to be the names and dates haven't been announced.
So like a late-night talk show?
Yeah, like a late-night talk show for HBO. I don't know if it's for, and the details are still a little fuzzy, so it might be for HBO. It might be for the HBO Go streaming service.
Yeah.
Huh.
So she's got a couple things in the works.
I got to be honest with you. Now that I'm thinking about this, I think she'd probably be a pretty good talk show host.
Yeah, I don't think so.
She's better than me, yeah, easily. But well, she has a great way about her. She's very funny. She's charming.
Yeah, her the thing she did for Netflix where she just was like talking to regular people about America. Like She's a pretty good interviewer.
Yeah.
Regular humans, anyway.
The only details they have about this are it says she'll be weighing in on the Michigas of the week and taking live video calls, which sounds like...
Not the time to have a conversation.
I mean, except for the video calls part. Sounds like normal.
Yeah,
like,
the video calls stuff. Thing. Well, sounds like, coast, that sounds coast. Like that'll suck.
Maybe it's
yeah.
Space Coast.
Yeah.
The problem is going to be...
Never mind.
When she starts pulling her eyes back and stuff and doing weird things like that.
Yeah.
It gets herself fired again. But, you know, it's okay, Sarah.
Yeah. She got fired for one thing.
Yeah, it's true.
And
blackface.
Cool. She was like the one person who was cool about it. Like, she was like, yeah, I did that. It was really stupid. I deserve to be, you know, I deserve to be fired for that.
Yeah.
That's, like, the best attitude you can have, really. Like,
yeah.
So, good for her.
Absolutely. Can't argue.
Okay, so, ending on a slightly more ominous note. Not necessarily anything bad, but big changes, I guess, for comedy are coming at Netflix. This is according to Bloomberg.
I hope they're not bringing Louis C.K. back. What's going on with this graphic?
Louis C.K., Sarah Silverman, that guy from Shane Gillis.
Oh, Shane Gillis, yeah. Throw him in there.
No, so they had cut back on their comedy specials this year. They did 30 this year compared to 50.
Well, they got
to
pay Eddie Murphy.
They've got to pay Eddie Murphy, exactly. The company says it's refining its strategy. They are basically they're cutting back on the comedy specials, and there are a lot of different ways to interpret that. The company says, like, basically, we've been building this catalog over the past couple years. We don't need to keep going at the volume we're going, so that's all that's happening.
Which is reasonable.
Other people are sort of worried.
It's the end of the world as we know it.
This was reported widely, but this piece from Bloomberg was talking about some of the financial aspects in terms of the comedy industry, and does this represent a contraction of sort of the stuff we talk about week to week of, you know, all these streaming services and all these platforms and all these mm-hmm. places for comics to do their stuff. Mm-hmm. Does this represent sort of a, a deflation or a contraction of that? Hard to say, but...
Well,
but Amazon's doing more.
Well, and, you know...
There you go.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah,
that's their problem.
But Amazon didn't have that many.
I feel that the issue here is just the amount of money that Netflix puts into producing and paying the talent that they have.
Yeah.
They have very exclusive, very high-priced deals with people. Chappelle, obviously, Eddie Murphy now. Didn't they have a deal with Seinfeld, too? With convincing cars getting coffee?
Chris Rock.
Chris Rock. All these people are getting paid big bucks through Netflix. Yeah. Okay. You have an amazing stable at the top there.
Yeah.
Awesome. But the problem that I see here is they dump so much money into those guys. They don't. Most of the other specials that they have are produced by the performers.
Yeah. Yeah.
They produce them and pay for them themselves to get them made, and then they sell them to Netflix. So other streaming services are going to have way more opportunities to get some of the up-and-coming names So comedy might not be as prevalent on Netflix. You'll still see the big names, I would imagine, because they're all massive contracts. But the upcoming comics are going to have to find somewhere else to go. And they're going to be producing their specials anyway.
I'm going to Pornhub.
Well, part of the business
model, after the show.
Part of the business model with Netflix, too. I'm there right now.
Put your phone down.
Well, part of the business model with Netflix, too, like Uber and Lyft and a lot of other companies, is we're going to spend a ton of money. We're going to run into the red for as long as it takes to push people out of the game. So the question is, have they done that, or have they decided that that's no longer, you know, a way to go?
Viable.
It'll be interesting, yeah.
Brian,
but
well, I'm gonna go ahead and say
your comedy special's canceled. I'm sorry to say.
I fucked up one question.
Please, I'm not worried about it. That's why this whole thing doesn't. I'm not even bothered. not even remotely bothered.
Yeah, I don't think this is a news story.
I think it's interesting. I feel like Netflix doesn't make a lot of sense.
Well,
the whole thing doesn't make sense to me. The amount of money that they're constantly spending on content. And how many subscribers they have. Like, their books are almost a secret. Nobody knows what's going on over there. It's a weird-ass business.
Oh, well, the goal is, you know, it's again, it's like the rideshare services. They're Uber and Lyft are both running, like, I think, like $1 billion a piece in the red.
From what I understand, is they lose...
To push everything else out, and then when they've got control, they can start making money. So I think that's Netflix's business model. I don't know if that's working, you know.
Yeah.
Only they know.
It was at first.
Yeah.
Well... Here we are. It's 2019. Make or break it, baby. Let's find out what's going on. That's this week's episode of the Carlson Cast. Thank you, Ross Johnson, for doing an adequate job as usual. Brian J. Ball, I liked it better when you were gone. Hmm? For those of you listening in at home, you know who you are. You're extra special to us, right, Ross?
Absolutely.
Who loves these
special
people?
Angels?
Except for you, Bill.
That's right.
Oh, Bill.
We hate Bill.
He's still there.
Yeah. Can't stop. He's obsessed.
Oh, my God.
We'll be back next week with our 100th episode. It'll be a fun surprise, and we're looking forward to it. So please join us. Until then, act right, and don't be a mark.